Chapter 26. A Curious Choice of Emissary. Transactor 7Y1. When the dawn alarm sounded across the Delphic battlement, the Skitarius lifted her new rifle by the strap and rose to her iron feet. She hadn't been sleeping, exactly. That was a luxury her creators had denied to her, in the strictest sense, just lightly dozing with her back to the Merlons. Hundreds of soldiers nearby did as she did, reaching for weapons and breaking free of any shallow attempts at slumber. Arkan Land grumbled, still wrapped in his threadbare cloak, refusing to stand up from where he huddled on the marble floor. Sapien was far more eager. The Artificimian leapt to her shoulder, chittering his bastardized utterances of skit code. Transactor 7Y1 replied in her own code, adjacent to the creature's own, but flavoured by the slang of her own macroclade, that, yes, she would endeavour to keep him safe. Sapien expressed a coded desire that she remain alive if she were able to do so. In return, she expressed that surviving would be a most agreeable course of action, but that it didn't look likely, did it? The cyber monkey narrowed its machine eyes as it processed what had amassed on the horizon. After a moment, Sapien confirmed that, no, survival did not seem likely at all. Transactor 7Y1 looked up briefly, in defiance of the standing order. The heavens, perceivable only intermittently through the ash, undulated with aurora borealis tendrils of queasy light. It looked as though Terra's magnetic field had cancer.
"Is it starting?"
Land asked from where he hunched. Transactor 7Y1 confirmed that it was. Fear widened Land's eyes, but it was a fear tempered by the one thing that could always overcome even the basest emotion. Exhaustion overrides all else. The body and mind only have so much to give, and Arkan Land already looked halfway to death. After almost a year of this madness, day and night, dawn to dusk, after choking on ash and dust for months, after falling back again and again from burning strongholds and fleeing from the advancing horde, after fighting blind in ruins and attending hundreds of war councils that were all steeped in the taste of oncoming failure, after giving every iota of strength he possessed purely in the pursuit of staying alive while terror burned around him, he was shattered by weariness. With nowhere left to run, he was too tired to be afraid anymore. He was not alone in this. Transactor 7Y1 was hardly a savant when it came to reading human expressions, but what she saw on Arkan Land's gaunt features was no different from what she saw on every other human's face, civilian, refugee, and soldier alike, though she supposed they were all soldiers now. Everyone that could carry a rifle was doing so. The end of the world was a great equalizer. Transactor 7Y1 stared across the wasteland, her monovisor clicking as it zoomed and refocused.
"Is it the Titans?"
Land asked her, still refusing to rise.
"Are they sending their Titans in first?"
Transactor 7Y1 held back her reply. After cancelling her visual zoom, she looked left and right at the defenders closest by. On one side was a spread of Imperial Army soldiers from the 91st Indostani drop troops, all without their traditional grav chutes, grounded for the final battle, and she needed no special insight to read the confusion on their faces. Those with magnoculars didn't look confused. They looked horrified. On her other side was the Legionis Astartes officer Zephon, former Dominion of the High Host, and the three unaugmented humans he claimed as his thralls. Further along the wall was a cluster of blood angels, and one of these was Nasir Amit, Dominion of the Secutors, standing still unhelmed. She saw him lean forward, his knuckles on the rampart as he stared in dawning anger, and she heard him very clearly say,
"Those honourless bastards."
Transactor 7Y1 turned back to regard the horde on the horizon. Even with her repaired helm, the distance stole significant visual detail. She rested the barrel of her new transuranic arquebus on the ramparts before her and peered through the scope. What she saw defied easy contextualization. This she conveyed to her new benefactor in a brief utterance of code.
That doesn't sound optimal,
Land replied, and rose to his feet at last, unnerved by the reactions of those around him. Transactor 7Y1 panned her sniper rifle, and at her side, Land cranked and tuned his multi-spec goggles. The two of them stared out over the wasteland, where the ground was alive, breathing, changing, darkening, she thought. It came on in a tide, a mutilation of the churned earth eating up the distance between the battlement and the enemy's drawn-up front lines. The war-blasted earth soured as they watched, the stone blackening, in some places bubbling, in others sprouting fleshy protuberances or rupturing with questing roots. This corruption had a herald. A lone titan stepped forth from the horde, and it covered the wasteland in measured strides, externally sedate, though Transactor 7Y1 could practically sense the fusion broil of its heart reactor. Step by step, the titan grew in scale, leaving the enemy's front lines behind, walking the encroaching carpet of souring earth. After half a minute, she could hear its footfalls, faint with distance. "It's within range of the wall guns," said one of the nearby Blood Angels.
"Hold,"
was Amit's reply. Transactor 7Y1 kept watch through her scope. The titan was a reaver, revealed as it approached through the thinning mist, wearing the royal purple of the Legio Mordaxis. She had fought alongside Mordaxis, only briefly but with great pride, 9 years before, at the compliance of 308-13. Her heart sank a little at that, though perhaps it would be more accurate to say that she experienced a protracted moment of emotional disquiet, which, in reality, had nothing to do with the processes of her heart. She tracked her view either side of the Titan, back to the faraway massing of the Horde. A forest of girders and scrap metal poles stood at the edge of the enemy's lines, erected over the last days by the toiling of who knew how many slaves and servitors and demonic things bound to the purpose. These spikes were put to use in the weak dawn light as impaling posts and gallows, used for thrashing mutilated captives. Transactor 7Y1 focused on one of the prisoners being bound up onto a scrapyard pylon. She didn't know the regimental colours of the man's uniform, but he was clearly an infantryman, his flak armour hanging in rags, carved away by lashing whips. His face was a mess of blood and barbed wire. He had no teeth, no eyes, no hands. All were gone, taken from him by his captors before they trussed him up there to dangle and die. Beneath his footless legs, his mutated overseer rejoiced in his agony. A horned beast man brayed and laughed, silent at this distance, but with its animal glee visible on its bestial visage. The Titan marched on. Behind it, the hundreds of tortured prisoners displayed to the defenders became thousands. They hung from their impaled limbs. They dangled in cradles of barbed wire. Some of them were even driven forward, a low tide of them, laughingly shoved ahead of the enemy lines. Most of these crawled across the ruined ground, towards the Delphic battlement, the stubs of their amputated legs leaving them no choice but to drag themselves belly down in the dirt. Behind them came those that couldn't even crawl, the limbless and the poisoned, and the ones on the very edge of death. Packed into open-topped civilian cargo haulers, chained to the sides of supply trucks and army chimeras, hundreds of vehicles rolled forward, none of them avoiding the wave of mutilation making its weeping way towards the battlement. They ground the wounded beneath their heels and tracks with heedless abandon. These vehicles inevitably crashed and rolled across the encancered earth, some left to founder with their miserable dying cargoes, others set aflame from rockets fired by their own overseers. Transactor 7Y1 saw mutilated Skitari within the captives' ranks. She saw tech priests and Martian menials, non-combatants whose only sin had been to remain loyal to the Omnissiah's vision of what Mars could be. She felt the thin, epiglottal sting of bile as she saw soldiers just like her, stripped of their divine bionics, impaled, crucified, bound in webs of razor wire, or dragging themselves over the broken ground in a futile attempt to reach safety. And she wondered at the mindsets of these most pitiable refugees. What mesh of ghastly hope and mournful reality sloshed around in the pain drunkenness of their thoughts? Maybe some really did hope for safety, for succor, and perhaps even healing, if they could just reach their fellow defenders on the Delphic battlement. But how many didn't even know where they were, with their senses taken from them? How many knew only that this was more torture, and prayed for a death thus far denied? Instinct had her tracking the numerals on her rifle's rangefinder, as if she could hit anything from this distance. Then she lowered her arquebus. She'd seen enough for now. Along the wall, in both directions, the voices of human officers began to rise in an uneasy melange. They wanted the wall guns to fire. They wanted to bombard the wasteland. They wanted to put the captives out of their misery. But the afflictions took place out of range, and the defense cannons stayed silent. Meanwhile, the Titan marched closer. When Sanguinius, the ninth Primarch and Lord of the Blood Angels Legion, landed next to her, she did not react quite the same way as many of those around her. The Blood Angels saluted, as would be expected, either with the sign of the Aquila or the older custom of a fist over their hearts. The human soldiers stepped back, thunderstruck, mumbling greetings and praises if they found the capacity to speak at all. The Legion thralls, of which there were almost 40 gathered on this section of the wall, went to one knee in almost programmed unity, lowering their heads in reverence. Even Arkhan Land jerked in surprise, his expression momentarily stunned before reality filtered back, and he turned his gaze pointedly away. The Lord Sanguinius, after all, had refused Land's plea to retake Mars before the War Master reached Terra. Some things would never be forgiven. But Transactor 7Y1 had a Skitarius's perspective of the Primarchs. She regarded the towering figure with respect and entirely without reverence. This immense winged thing was no demigod, and she would not treat it as such. It was undoubtedly a product of the Omnissiah's vision, of course, but it was not the Omnissiah's son. If the Omnissiah was to create offspring, the fruits of that project would share in his divine perfection, not fail to the point where half of the children rebelled against their godly father and set the galaxy aflame. Then there were the philosophical considerations. Why exactly would the machine god breed into being 18 largely biological children? Several of them possessed minor augmentation, but nothing significant. Nothing that spoke of purity. No. She could accept that they were an intriguing product of the Omnissiah's genetic cauldrons. She could not accept their bizarre hubris in claiming to be his sons. Most likely, the flaws in the project were the result of Terran scientist priests misinterpreting the Omnissiah's will, further proof of the fallibility and lack of divinity in the entire operation. So she did not genuflect. And she did not, as her dead companion, Envaric, would have said in the style of his idioms, bow and scrape at the Primarch's arrival. She regarded the figure in beauteous gold, greeted him with a Martian salute, her knuckles linking to make the sign of the cog, then turned back to the wasteland, clutching her rifle. Behind her they discussed what would come next, and the Reaver strode closer, closer still. It had outpaced the host of wounded and was now almost halfway to the wall, walking through an invisible web of unused firing solutions. Sanguinius could click his golden fingers, and weaponry capable of boring through to the planet's mantle would erase the lone Titan from existence. "We should kill it, sir," said one of the captains. Transactor 7Y1 identified the speaker by his armour, Apollo, an officer of the 48th Company. "Nothing good can come of letting it reach the wall." "No," Zephon interrupted. "Every second counts. Every single one. If Horus wishes to burn through time with melodrama, then we will let him have his way.
All the while, the 13th Legion sails closer to Terra. These theatrics benefit us, not the enemy.
Apollo fixed Zephon with a stare.
Thousands of prisoners are dying in agony. That's rather more than theatrics, Zephon.
I will destroy it, Sanguinius said softly. But not yet.
Transactor 7Y1 ceased listening. She had no interest in their cost-benefit analysis of the situation, and she knew she was beneath the notice of the Legion officers and their lord anyway. For a time she watched the Titan, an emissary from Mordaxis. Without really thinking, she exhaled a blurt of code. At her side, Land nodded and licked his cracked lips.
Indeed, he murmured. Indeed so.
The youngest of the Blood Angel thralls, his red robe overlaid with ill-fitting flak armour, cleared his throat and addressed the techno-archaeologist.
May I ask, what did the cyborg say?
Transactor 7Y1 glanced at the human, but with no means of communication, she made no effort to explain herself. She doubted Land would translate for her either. For all his genius, which was both considerable and undeniable, he seemed to have deep-rooted emotional turbulence. Zephon had asked him to protect the three servants, not to be pleasant to them. So it surprised the Skitarius when Land turned his ashy face to the Legion thrall.
Your name is Shenkai, isn't it?
The young man, his face as filthy as everyone else's, nodded.
Yes, Sire Land.
Well, Shenkai, this is Transactor 7Y1. She said it pained her to see any god machine, each one a being of blessed iron forged in the Omnissiah's own image, on the wrong side of the war. Doubly so because she once fought alongside Legio Mordaxis, and she mourns that she must now see their engines animated by heretical purpose.
Shenkai regarded the Skitarius with a long look. Transactor 7Y1 could read the sympathy there, and gratitude stirred in the tired soup of her own emotional core. She inclined her helmeted head in response to the thrall's acknowledgement and expressed a shorter sliver of code. Land translated again.
She says you may call her tea.
Shenkai smiled.
Then I will do so. Thank you.
Transactor 7Y1 turned back to the wasteland. She watched it turn black. She watched the Titan stalk nearer. She noted that it kept its right hand curled in a loose fist, binding something within the great cage of its grip.
A curious choice of ambassador,
Land mused aloud. Zephon's reply was low and tight.
It has something in its hand.
The Reaver, Transactor 7Y1 read the name on its tilting shield, Daughter of Torment, brought itself to a stop. Momentum meant it took time to settle on its pistons, adapting to standing and powering down its locomotive processes. The defenders could make out the details of its allegiance with their own eyes now, with the god machine only a kilometre from the wall. There it halted, close enough to unleash its weapons if it chose to do so, far enough away that its reactor, going critical, wouldn't damage the battlement. Its banners swayed in the wind, its primary pennant hanging between its cabled thighs like a barbarian's loincloth. Slowly, the emissary from Mordaxis began to lift its hand. Even from this distance, with all the incidental noise of the humanity along the wall and the active reactors of their own titans, Transactor 7Y1 could hear the clangorous grind of the Reaver's joints. It stood before the wall, its hand outstretched towards the men and women gathered in their thousands. While its pose was that of a beggar, it brought a gift. There, in its palm, was a lone jewel of burnished red. Transactor 7Y1 heard Amit's growl. She heard Zephon's softer exhalation, and the way others among the Astartes cursed beneath their breath. She heard, most distinctly of all, Sanguinius's gentle lament, in a language she knew must be Enochian. A blood angel lay in the Titan's palm, cradled there with misleading gentleness. Like the human prisoners, he had been mutilated, but he was left with all the trappings of his rank, the gold edgings of his armour, the noble flow of his cloak. His cheeks were stained with black streaks and burn markings, and judging by the damage, Transactor 711 suspected the enemy had poured a corrosive agent into his eye sockets. She watched his mouth working, seeing the swollen, tongueless red mess there, and she wondered what the man was trying to say. An oath, most likely. Astarte's warriors made no shortage of oaths. Instead of words, he spoke blood. The Blood Angel was dying, and it was a miracle of dubious fortune that he still lived. The mutilations weren't enough to kill him. The true wounds that paralyzed him and kept him in place were the seven spears thrust through his body, nailing him to the Titan's palm. Zephon took a step forward, and the thrusters of his jump pack gave a throaty whine in sympathy. "Hold," Sanguinius whispered, the command as delicate as a knife held against skin. Zephon looked over his shoulder at the Primarch. "But hold, Zephon. Do you truly believe you can surge over there and save him? Stand down, bringer of sorrow." Zephon held, that cold and sentient anger darkening his features. His teeth were parted as he stared at the desecration with haunted eyes. In contrast, Amit was all silent heat. Hate was an aura around him, and his warplate purred as it answered the shifts in his muscled frame.
"Who is it?"
Land asked, peering through his goggles, tuning them with clicks of the side dials.
"Who have they crucified?"
Sanguinius was the one to answer, his voice no more than a breath.
"It's Adamus."
It was as if the name became a signal. Along the wall, tens of thousands of voices rose in anger, in defiance, in denial. Transactor 7Y1 saw the impaled figure of Adamus, captain of the 99th Company, lift his head and turn towards the sound. Something pathetically like hope dawned across his ruined face. The Titan was waiting for this. It started closing its hand, the fingers curling with a squeal of scraping joints.
"Transactor 7Y1, Sanguinius said softly, "please take the shot."
She hesitated at being addressed by the Primarch, and Amit misinterpreted it as reluctance.
"Do it," he grunted.
She did it. The arquebus kicked, spitting a penetrator round of depleted transuranium. A kilometre away, the Blood Angel's captain jerked, and the insides of his skull blasted out the back of his head to paint the iron of the Titan's closing thumb. Transactor 7Y1 racked the slide, ejecting the spent cartridge. It chimed sweetly against the marble rampart, steaming with the blue mist of discharge.
"Thank you," said Sanguinius.
He was staring at the Titan, at the body in the Titan's clutches, with the air of a man too dutiful to close his eyes and deny the truth. The Reaver, its performative cruelty stolen, nevertheless finished pulping the carcass between its digits. There was a brief anticlimactic pop of sparking energy as Captain Adamus's power pack detonated. Then all that remained were the bloody, meat-wadded scraps of ceramite embedded into the god machine's fingers.
"That was an ugly death,"
murmured Land, seemingly to himself.
"But he lived a warrior's life," Sanguinius countered.
Transactor 7Y1, who could see both perspectives, wasn't entirely certain the latter overrode the former. Nor could she see why the demise of a single Blood Angels officer seemed to matter so profoundly to the Ninth Primarch. Was there something of particular significance to Captain Adamus? Daughter of Torment had presented its gift and made its point. Now the Titan dictated its terms. The offer came forth in a strained trio of overlapping voices, as if conflicting spirits animated the Reaver's bones. All three voices were feminine, all three seeming to speak with throatfuls of venom, burbling across the wasteland. Transactor 7Y1, who had experienced exactly zero erotic imaginings since her metamorphosis began, still felt the voices caress something inside her with a wet, disgusting silkiness.
"Horus, War Master and true Emperor of the Imperium, offers the defenders of the Sanctum Imperialis his warmest greetings. He commends you on your resolve thus far, and admires you all for your efforts in fighting for what you believe is right.
I'm sure he does,
Amit growled through a fanged grin, and Transactor 7Y1's lipless mouth curled in secret mirth. She stole a glance at Sanguinius, but the Primarch's face was emotionless marble. The Titan's three-voice decree echoed out from its cockpit speakers.
Emperor Horus, true heir to the throne and crown of Terra, also wishes it to be known that anyone, be they human or Astartes, that surrenders their weapons now and abandons the Delphic battlement, will be permitted to leave the field of conflict, free and unharmed.
Murmurs started to spread along the wall. This was unexpected. This was new.
Furthermore,
the Reaver blared,
Emperor Horus Lupercal declares that upon making planetfall, he intends to journey to the Sanctum Imperialis. Should the Eternity Gate stand open upon his arrival, he offers an imperial pardon to each and every one of you, with no conditional stipulation. He grants forgiveness to all.
Amit grunted.
Here comes the but.
However,
the Titan bellowed,
should the Eternity Gate stand closed, he will regard this as an act of continued hostility. Any soul refusing to acknowledge Horus Lupercal as the master of mankind, and who resists the true Emperor's entrance into the Sanctum Imperialis, will be dealt with as an enemy of the Imperium.
The last words burbled from the Reaver's vox speakers. It sounded like the crew was gargling engine oil inside the God Machine's core.
The War Master's army will march in 1 hour. If you choose to abandon your charade of defiance, launch signal flares from the Delphic battlement that we might bear witness to your capitulation. If you should destroy this emissary, your continued rebellion will be noted, and you will forsake the hour of grace granted to you. Emperor Horus Lupercal has spoken.
With its message delivered, the ambassador began the laborious process of reawakening its locomotors and slowly, slowly turning. All eyes turned to Sanguinius. He was lord of the last wall. The right to reply was his alone. Transactor 7Y1 wondered if he might open fire out of spite, for the Primarchs were notoriously emotional beings. One moment they seemed a curious and fleshy ideal, indeed more human than human. The next, they were as petty as a pantheon of godlings from the pagan tales of old Earth. It would have been a useless unleashing of firepower. The death of a single Titan would make no difference in the face of what was about to descend upon the wall. But the Skitarius still suspected that the order would be given. Anger often overrode the logistics of futility, among mortals at least. Yet the Ninth Primarch remained calm. He spoke no words from a state of emotional flux, and Daughter of Torment stalked back towards her lines, the ground shaking less with each retreating step. She was allowed to live in exchange for one precious hour of grace. Amit spoke low so his voice wouldn't carry.
Some of the humans, sire. The promise of safety after surrender. That offer will tempt them.
Transactor 7Y1 did not know if this was the case. The variances of human behaviour were extreme, yes, but also mysterious. Judging by the fact Arkan Land was nodding, however, she presumed that Captain Nasir Amit was correct in his assertion. Some of the unaugmented would indeed wish to flee. And Transactor 7Y1 wasn't entirely without sympathy. Many of the scrap code sermons infecting the Mechanicus's communication network made some troubling statements regarding the fallibility of the Omnissiah. She, too, had considered abandoning her post. Not that she would ever confess to such momentary weaknesses of faith. That was between her and her god. The Ninth Primarch didn't answer the genetically manipulated warrior template that he sometimes referred to as his son. His response to Amit's warning was the last thing Transactor 7Y1 could possibly have anticipated.
I do not want to be here,
said the Emperor's perfect son. His voice was soft, rancid with truth. He said those seven words, not declaratively, more in an expression of gentle contemplation, as if the idea had only now occurred to him. as if indeed he'd only now remembered the words themselves. Then he took 3 steps forward to the very edge of the ramparts, and with a crack of his white wings, he took to the sky.